Welcome back, everybody. This is Cinema D'Amore. I'm Chuck Phillips, joined by...
I'm James Reinhardt.
Justin Morgan.
And Chris Kevall.
And we're here to talk about my pick and Justin's mystery theme that you may or may not figure out by the end of this episode, which is Predestination, which is a nice little independent sci-fi film starring Handsome Hawk as everybody. Just get that out of the way real quick. But it's an interesting movie. I chose it because
you like.
I'm always a fan. Well, I like. I chose it because I love sci-fi and I like time travel movies, and this is.
Sexual organ mysteries.
Yeah. I love transgendered mysteries.
Yeah, it's going to be hard discussing. I guess we should...
Pun intended.
I guess we should, disclaimer, if any of you are interested in watching Predestination, where there's really, it's pretty impossible to talk about this movie without spoiling the fuck out of it.
Yeah.
You need to watch it first before you listen to this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you don't care...
You already ruined it, Chuck, though.
I know.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
You're too late into it. If you've already reached this point, it's done.
If you can't tell...
Chuck's sweating, and he's like, Ethan Hawke is everybody.
We're all chomping at the bit. I have been chomping at the bit to talk about this movie, and it's,
What bit have you been chomping at?
I told you earlier.
It's a little indeterminate at the moment.
I told Justin before we recorded today that the day after I watched this, I hung out with friends, and I'm like, guys, I got to tell you about this batshit movie I watched last night. And I'm just going to tell you the whole fucking plot, because I need to talk about the...
Yeah, and you have to... Yeah, you can't just give them a little bit of the plot and be like, hey, let's discuss this. You have to give them the full thing so they know what you're going in for.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. I had to go into work. I bought it at work, and then I had to go immediately the next day and tell this other guy that I work with that loves sci-fi. I had to tell him, you got to see this movie. He's like, what's it about? I said,
a little of everything.
I'm gonna go into all of it, and he said, "Well, I'll still watch it."
Yeah, that's gonna be my question. Like, how did you discover this movie? Because I had never heard of it until you.
He saw Handsome Hawk on the cover, and it's like sold.
I saw that face. Yeah, I was at work at Walmart, which Walmart's a great and terrible place to work because you'll see so many. That's where you see all the direct-to-DVD movies that you wouldn't find anywhere else. If we were still working at Hollywood Video, that's where
fifth shelf. Yep.
We would have seen it there or something like that, but just saw it sitting there. And yeah, I saw Handsome Hawk and said, well, it's got to be worth checking out. And I looked up the directors they did. Before that, they did Daybreakers, which I thought was mildly interesting.
Yeah, I thought that
Ethan Hawke again.
Pretty good... vampire movie, like a good twist on a vampire movie.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Yeah, I'll agree. Yeah, like that was a very solid.
They've most recently done the newest Jigsaw movie, so
I enjoy Jigsaw, but not anything special.
Yeah, it's a bigger step for them. They're getting to a franchise. Maybe they can. Hopefully, they can continue on from that.
I really hope they make a sequel to Predestination.
I was just going to say there's going to be a franchise for Predestination.
How many other different ways can a guy fuck himself?
Oh, you'd be surprised. But
it's a story about a guy that fucks himself. Oh, that sounds cool. No, he literally is going to fuck himself.
Yeah, that's what I said. It gives a new definition to the term "go fuck yourself." But anyways, check out.
My favorite thing was when we were talking a little bit before the podcast. Me and James, I was like, "Yeah, but they didn't know they were fucking each other." And James says, "One of them knew that they were fucking themselves."
Yeah, it's interesting the way, once I watched it, this was only the second time I watched it, I saw it once, and then, just since we were talking about it again, is the second time I watched it, and 100% watching it a second time, you pick up on a lot of the small little things mixed in there that give clues to what's happening, and who is who, and you kind of, then you start to really see... Does this person know that this person exists at this moment? Do they know later? What year is it? Where are they at the current moment? It's on your first watch, you kind of sit there and think, where's this person right now?
Yeah, that was what I was curious about.
Can they be connected? Have they met themselves yet? Have they not met themselves? But I think it starts off great. They kind of give you a good kind of in-joke kind of reference that gives you a hint when the woman, well, the guy, the unmarried mother, who writes confessional stories, goes in the bar and asks Ethan Hawke's character, tell me a joke, and his joke is, which came first, the chicken or the egg? And her response is, the rooster. And that's kind of the whole point of this is, it's where did he... That I guess is the real question. Where does Ethan Hawke's character, how does he get into the story? Because they talk about how he himself is a paradox, and no one seems to know where or how he got here. They just use him because they know he's the perfect agent. That's what with Noah Taylor, his last name.
Yeah.
Noah Taylor tells him, you know, you're the perfect temporal agent, which is basically a time cop.
He's the perfect agent.
He's the perfect agent because he has no
connections.
Taylor
tells him.
Yeah, he has no connections to the future or the past, and he is his own family, so he never can connect to anybody, so he's the perfect agent to send on suicide missions or wherever they need him to go to prevent catastrophes, but...
He, in the beginning of the movie, he's trying to stop somebody that's setting up a bomb. And he...
The Fizzle Bomber.
Fails, and gets his face blown off, and through plastic surgery becomes Ethan Hawke.
Yeah.
And then they kind of explain that he has to go back in time to stop this bomber. So that's generally where it starts. And he goes back to 1960, even?
1975.
75 is where he starts?
Well, 75 is
where...
Oh,
75 is where... Yeah, 75... Yeah. Sorry, 75 is where the incident happens. I'm sorry. Because
it sets it up like it's gonna be like a crime. I was assuming that's gonna be Ethan Hawke chasing this bomber throughout time.
Yeah.
And then it where very quickly goes a much different direction.
Yeah.
So it's like subtle bar moment. I was like, oh, it kind of has these film noir elements in the beginning. This is neat.
Yeah.
And 5 minutes, 10 minutes into the bar scene, I'm like, oh, it's just going to be a movie with two people talking.
Yeah.
Because the dialogue's really interesting between these two in the bar. I thought it was really well written, and I thought they had really good charisma. So I was like, oh, this is the movie.
I'd say the one thing I thought when I first saw the one character played by Sarah Snook, who is a man, but even though you kind of hear people call her a car... It gets hard to say they call him a freak and stuff, so they know people have assumptions, you know, this isn't a normal person, normal guy, for the 70s especially, where you didn't really see a lot of transgendered people or cross-dressing people typically out in the open, but my first thought was, that makeup looks like Leo DiCaprio.
Oh my god.
This is my first random thought was... They just made him look like Leo.
I didn't... Yeah, oh my god, yeah. Now I see it. I didn't see it.
Almost perfectly.
It just didn't even look right, which Ethan Hawke's character points out, where he's like, sir or ma'am, like, I don't remember, I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
He points out the fact that he can't tell the gender exactly.
Yeah.
Or that the gender's disguised somewhat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then,
I think he's a big fan of this... author that writes smut
confessional stories.
Confessional stories, yes.
makes me think of those the penthouse forums that Kramer's obsessed with. No, you don't understand. They're real.
Mm-hmm.
They're real stories. Look at this one. You'll never believe this, but it's true.
Well, there's a movie coming out with Melissa McCarthy, where she...
Oh yeah, she forges the...
Yeah, and this is what it kind of reminded me of a little bit. Like, I just studied it enough. I can do it too.
Yeah. But she bets him that she has the most interesting story that he'll ever hear, which we later learn is he knows the whole story since he is her.
Person in question,
that's,
yeah.
That's all you can say, but she was an orphan who was abandoned in 45, I think, was when she was abandoned. And they play it really well that once they show you who everyone is and where everyone's at, like, you don't see everybody as they're in the moment. So it just seems like it is a normal conversation of her really strange story that she grew up as a girl in an orphanage. And
is it the best story that you've ever heard?
Not bad. As Ethan Hawke tells her, it's not bad. And she knows she's different, but can't figure out why until she grows up and meets Noah Taylor's character, who is running a secret government program that is disguised as a program to find basically hookers for astronauts because they need to have something to fuck when they go to space.
It's a great program.
Which is, and it's an interesting concept because it makes you wonder where, again, like how they found her and where, like, did Noah Taylor find her here? Or did he find her later in the timeline and realize it was the same person? They never really 100% figure out where she's found. And
yeah, because it already has that full circle storytelling to it.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell where the circle starts. It's already completing things that you've already seen. There's no moment in the entire film that you could feel like
this is
they didn't know, and that's where they were pushed into this direction.
Yeah, and that's why I like the play on the title is good, Predestination, and it gets brought up by multiple times by the characters. Do I have a choice? Could I change this? And every time they're kind of told, sure, you always have a choice, but at any time, any of the choices that Ethan Hawke's character makes, if he makes one wrong choice, he'll just end his entire existence. If he does one thing wrong, if he doesn't get this character to 1963, if he doesn't get this person to a specific time period, his whole existence will just end.
I feel a lot of lost vibes when the whole whatever happened happened. People have choices, but it kind of has that Oedipus Rex thing where you can try to stay away from it. But in that process,
in trying to stay away from it, you actually caused
it. If he would have just tried to let it go, you kind of caused the events.
Yeah.
While trying to avoid them, I always like that.
Yeah, which is kind of he gives her the choice. She says that she fell for an older man who seduced her and had money and told her she was pretty and she wanted to stay with him forever, and he broke her heart because he left, and she has no idea why. And Ethan Hawke basically gives her the chance to turn away and leave. He keeps asking her, "Would you kill him what if I could show you who he is? What if I could put him right in front of you? Would you kill him?" And she keeps saying, "Yeah, I would." And he said, "Are you sure? If I show you exactly who it is, are you going to do it?" And she keeps saying yes, but
well, she gets pregnant by this stranger. This familiar stranger.
Yeah.
And after the pregnancy, there's some complications. And this is where I know this is a Chuck movie. So, Chuck, what happens?
Well, they get the baby out by C-section. And then they figure out something's not right here. And we're told earlier that something's wrong with her. By when she's in the space program and they do a deep, more exhaustive physical on her, they tell Noah Taylor's character there's something unusual about her, but they won't tell her because they want to. Well, I guess later we would see that Noah Taylor's character knows that this has to play out this way, that she has to leave here and go move on and find something else, but they don't tell her what's wrong until she has her baby, and they figure out that she has both sets of genitalia, and the female set is just beyond saving, but good news, she gets a penis.
I think you're a man now.
One of the greatest moments, too, is the doctor realizing that, oh, you don't know about this already?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, fuck me as I have to explain this now.
He's like, ever hear of the Scottish doctor?
That became a man, like, halfway through life? And she's like, what does that have to do with me? He's like, oh, well, it's pretty similar.
Yeah, and at first I was like, oh, cool, this movie has, like, a trans character. Just really forward-thinking, but then it's like well, we're going to make you a man against your will. And I'm like, that's less forward-thinking than I thought this would be. But
well, I think it might make sense from, like, a 1960s perspective that maybe he thinks, hey, I'm doing you a favor.
Yeah.
Lots of people would kill to be a guy in this time period.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want now.
Yeah. I mean, look at Jamie Lee Curtis.
That's what I took it like. He was thinking, like, hey, I'm doing you a favor right now.
Yeah, I feel like in the 60s, that probably would be the attitude. But yeah, Jane, as she is called, becomes Joan.
And then her baby gets kidnapped.
Yeah, her baby disappears.
They don't know who took him, but she's gone. They don't know where she ended up.
We do.
Yeah, we're jumping ahead, though. There's plenty of timey-wimey stuff.
Are we jumping through time, James?
Much like this movie, yeah. We're jumping all over the place.
I actually think that the time-jumping special effects are more subtle in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
but it's kind of cool later, in the, like, towards the end of the movie where you see him jump, and it'll stay in that time for a little bit, so you'll watch him go out. And it's really cool because it just, like, blows everything away.
Yeah.
It has this cool effect where
windows.
It'll blow out windows or just, like, fucking knock everything all over the floor.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me a little bit of something like the Terminator, where they're in the balls, and the balls, like, affect everything around them.
Yeah, that's how he describes it, is you have to get into, like, the sphere of the containment sphere that emanates from the violin case, which is their time-traveling device. But yeah, he asks her, she tells him the story, and he asks her, would you like to meet the guy that ruined your life?
Did you like the fact that she tells this long-ass story, and Ethan Hawke says, I kind of know. I know your whole story already.
He starts dropping names, telling her that Robertson's behind it, that they have a secret underground lair just hidden underneath this bar.
It is interesting because at that point, they seem to set it up, before he's a bartender, as a hit of sorts.
Yeah.
And because he's trying to catch the Fizzle Bomber, which is a terrible name, and they do point out it's a terrible name.
Yeah.
They kind of lead you to believe that this is the Fizzle Bomber, and he's going to have to take her out.
Because she says things like, she brings up the fact that, oh, it's a terrible name, they shouldn't call him, she sounds like,
defensive of it a little bit.
Yeah, they shouldn't call him that, he's much better than that, and he kills a lot of people, that makes him sound weak, and she says things like, well, maybe some people just need to leave, some people just need to get out of here. So yeah, it sets up that's what it could be, that he needs to take her out.
But it's also somewhat subtle foreshadowing for the twist later on. But alas, we'll get to that.
Yeah. So Ethan Hawke tries to take out, he takes her back to meet the guy that ruined her life. And while she's doing that, he tries to take the Fizzle Bomber out again, as he's tried before. And he gets into a confrontation with him, and we're shown that he saved himself, which he knew he would. He knew he had to, because previously, when she got her face blown off and
caught on fire,
before she turned into Handsome Hawk, we saw someone push the violin case to her. They don't tell you necessarily was it the Fizzle Bomber or somebody else, but he knew he had to go back and do that, because if he didn't, then he'd erase himself out of existence.
Again.
So he has to follow everything, which again, you know, he keeps asking, does he have a choice? And he did have a choice to not go back, but then, yeah, just would have erased himself out of existence by not doing that. But then we're...
Which, if you're in, like, this vicious cycle, I feel that eventually you might... I mean, that's how you die. You
might just be like, ah, fuck it.
When you've been doing it for so long, eventually they're going to break the cycle.
Yeah.
Well, that's how he describes it as a snake eating its own tail forever, that he has to just keep constantly going in this loop, and he feels trapped, but he goes back to 64... And
every year you have a question mark.
I have to try and keep it straight in my mind as to where he's going. But he goes back to 64, and we're shown that he is the one that kidnaps the baby, therefore kidnapping himself to take her back to 1945
to leave on the orphanage.
But wait, you presented it in a weird way. So she's dropped off at an orphanage as a child.
Yeah.
Grows up, eventually has a child that's stolen.
Yes.
But the stolen child is her because it's dropped off at the orphanage again.
And the person that steals her
is her.
Yeah. But also, you know, when he takes her back to meet the man who ruins her life, her as John bumps into Jane, and she realizes that she is John, the man who ruined her life, and she falls in love with herself, and they have a romantic relationship. Yeah. And, like, as John, he knows. Like, he realizes that moment that he's the one that ruined his female person's...
But he also, I think, realizes that he's the person that makes her into the person he is that day. Who he's to become.
Yeah.
I worded that in a very weird way.
But
he wouldn't be that person without himself.
Yeah. But then he mentions that he loves her. And I'm like, like, you're talking about yourself. Like, self-esteem is good. You should love yourself,
but not in a sexual way.
Yeah.
And it's very much...
Buffalo Bill said he'd fuck himself if he could.
Well, there was a scene where, like,
he wasn't fucked up
where John is standing on the steps of the college, and I'm like, wait, no, don't do it. Yeah. He's not the man of her dreams. He is not.
I like how it's presented, because he keeps looking at everybody that is standing there. They're all in the same place that he knows the person's supposed to be, and, like, the guy reaches into his bag, looks like he's gonna pull out a gun, which is odd, because they're like, I don't think the guy was gonna shoot her when he bumped into her 20 years ago.
Right.
I think that's presented real slowly, like there's gonna be a shootout, and then it's just real calmly, he just bumps into her and realizes, there's, like, a look on his face, too, like, fuck me. Literally, fuck me.
He's like, from the perspective earlier, too... They're clearly not showing this person's face.
Yeah.
You kind of get a feeling even then.
You do, yeah. I was just hoping that wasn't...
Yeah, is that the connection with the Prestige? Just not showing that person's face?
There's a lot of mystery.
Is that the connection?
There's mystery and misdirection. Mm. And both movies are shot, shown completely out of order from... how they actually take place.
And the theme is not mystery.
Mystery, yeah, exactly. The theme's still a mystery, but the theme is not mystery.
Right. Hopefully this is fun. Are you paying attention?
Are you watching?
You better be paying attention to this movie.
Yeah.
John and Jane fuck. They fuck themselves and then give birth.
Probably the best fuck of all time.
Right?
I guess, yeah. No
they
one
knew
knows.
What they wanted.
Yeah, no one knows what you like better than yourself. But yeah, and Jane gives birth to who we find out is herself. And, yeah.
If time travel ever becomes possible, I want to have both sets of genitalia.
Well, I know where this is going a little bit as Ethan Hawke takes his break and takes John down to the basement with him. And he starts singing that he's his own grandpa in a very unsubtle song. Like a weird song to just choose to sing. As he goes down to describe the time travel mechanism violin. I'm like, he's gonna be his own grandpa. Because I thought my idea of the movie before going into it was this mystery person is going to be himself.
Yeah.
Which I was right.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize how fucking crazy...
The journey to get to that.
Yeah, down this rabbit hole that I was going to go.
It gets a little intense. But we...
Is that the last of Ethan Hawke? Or are there more Ethan Hawke?
There's never enough Ethan Hawke. he realizes that he can't be in the same place with himself, I guess, technically. So once he takes his younger self to 1985, after revealing that the truth, obviously his younger self figures it out, but he reveals to him, there is a, again, he brings up, there's a choice. You could, if you stay with her though, we'll all just disappear. You know, you have to come back with me, and I'll make you a, you know, you'll be an important agent if you come back to 1985, which is the center of the temporal agency for whatever reason. Well, I think that was the year time travel was invented, and he brings up a rule that you can't go 53 years forward or backwards from that point before you can't time travel any further. It fails itself out.
Doc Brown was like, fuck it, 100 years.
Yeah. I like that it sets up rules, because I think it makes it feel more realistic to come up with an idea. It's not just, oh yeah, you can pick this up and go wherever you want.
Are you cool with rules without heavy explanation? I don't like heavy explanation, but do you wonder why things are the way they are?
I think it was easy enough to figure out that I don't think they had to go too deep into detail, but they bring up that it's the temporal vortex, and basically just sounds like if you go too far back or too far forward, you just lose that connection. The time machine just can't handle any further.
Yeah.
Does it makes it sound like?
Wonder if they lost any agents and how they would know.
I'm sure they had to have tested it.
Yeah.
I'm sure they lost a lot of people.
Do they know, like, what if it was like some time loop where they just don't remember even having an agent because they like wipes themselves out of existence or something?
But they also mentioned this, that if you time travel too much, it starts to have an effect on your psyche.
Yeah.
So that's why I assume maybe they couldn't travel that far in the future or in the past, because it would just have too much of an effect on your brain. Because they mentioned if you time travel too much, you start to develop dementia and stuff like that.
That kind of reminded me of butterfly effect. How in the butterfly effect, you know, if he keeps rewriting, and starts to lose a little bit.
I haven't seen the miniseries, but Stephen King's 11/22/63 deals with the same thing, where it's like, if you keep trying to change time enough times, as weird as that sounds, it has this very, very negative effect on the world.
Yeah.
Like, it actually kind of breaks time apart.
Yeah, and they seem like they know that, because Robertson tells him, when he tries to stop the fizzle bomber on his own, that was an unauthorized jump, and he tells him, we can only clean up so much every time you do a illegal jump. You can't just, if you keep doing that too many times, then you're gonna more or less rip a hole in the
fabric
of time that it'll eventually get to the point where we can't fix it anymore, and everything's just gonna go to hell if you keep jumping to random places. That they have more or less a chart of very limited options that they can kind of do this and maybe do that, but they can't, basically sounds like they can't just go back and say, all right, today we're going to go back and kill Hitler, and this week we're going to go back and kill Stalin, and this week we're going to stop John Wilkes Booth. Like, you can't just keep going back and changing history forever.
That'd be a paradox in itself.
Yeah.
Because if you went back in time to kill Hitler and succeeded, how could you go back in time to kill Hitler? Because then you wouldn't have the reason to go back and kill Hitler.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
Shooting Hitler, you would probably just tear a hole through space and time and destroy everything.
It starts to make your head hurt when you think about it a bit too much. They have a good little moment where he's recording on his tape recorder, and he's looking around outside, and he says, make sure when you come back you put a jacket and a hat in here. It's really cold in January. And then he opens up the cupboard, and there's a hat and a jacket in there.
Yeah.
Perfectly set for him.
I wouldn't remember.
The game,
be like,
like,
oh, I fucking
Ted's.
Forgot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was 100% of Bill and Ted's moment. Like, where would we put the keys? I think we probably would have put the keys right behind this sign.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, man, good thing you remember to put the keys behind the sign.
And don't forget the trash can.
Yeah. Don't forget it. But yeah, we're told that essentially when the agents retire, they can, their case deactivates, their violin case will just decommission, and they can just go wherever, they can settle down in one final place. And they have to live out the rest of their lives there, which kind of reminded me of Looper a little bit, where you just kind of have to take your final payment and just leave once they're done with you. Like they know where your usefulness ends, and once you hit that point, you have to take your money and leave, no questions asked, kind of.
Yeah.
And he chooses to go back to. I think he goes back to 1970. He goes back well before the Fizzle Bomber, but clearly he goes back to New York to try and work out one last clue to figure out how to stop that final explosion from happening. And when he gets back, his case says decommissioned, and then says error, failed, which, you know, isn't going to lead to anything good.
Mm-hmm.
And he then meets himself in our grand finale, and doesn't like what he sees.
Yeah, he meets old crazy Ethan Hawke, who is the Fizzle Bomber, and it's hinted at that he kept traveling because his case didn't decommission, and that drove him insane and made him become the Fizzle Bomber, who, like a lot of bad guys, thinks he's the good guy. He insists that he's doing good by causing these bombs.
Yeah, he counts. He keeps the newspaper clippings of every disaster that was averted because he killed somebody or blew something up, even though he doesn't. Yeah, not, doesn't necessarily take into account the
innocent
that,
people
that the other people. Yeah. You know, he's like, I saved 300 people here, but I, you know, maybe killed 100 people to save the 300. Like, he's trying to keep a balanced book of who he saves versus who he gets rid of, and he's constantly trying to stay ahead of how many people he can save, which seems like that's just how his mind kept working, is not necessarily that he wanted to keep traveling, but just that he figured, well, I have the case and it didn't fail, and
yeah,
why not try to help out a little bit more? But he finds out that he wants to kill himself, and his old self pretty much says, if you kill me, you'll just become me, and this will be the end. He tells him the only way you can stop this is to learn to love me again. And learn to love himself one more time. I didn't take it as a sexual manner, but
no.
he tells him,
I think
him,
it's more like accepting,
yeah,
himself.
He says you have to accept that.
But he winked, right?
Yeah, just a little bit. But yeah, he has to accept that he is the Fizzle Bomber, that he does maybe have a bad side to himself, and he is not necessarily a good guy, but his whole life has been predicated on stopping the Fizzle Bomber.
Mm.
And so he feels that he has to. And even though he knows it's just going to keep the cycle, and again, it's almost kind of if he...
Do you think you think he was surprised by all the twists? He keeps coming to these points in his life where he's like, oh, it was me.
Yeah,
oh,
like everything in his life is him.
Yeah, yeah. He's just like, I guess I fucking did everything.
Yeah.
And it's his final moment to have a choice, but again, he really doesn't have a choice because him existing at the same time as another version of himself would just create another paradox. And again, would probably just erase him from existence, which he kind of tells him. That's kind of how he gives him the choice, you know, kill, either accept me and we'll all just disappear and be gone forever, or kill me and just keep on doing what you're doing right now. And it's a good ending.
You also think that if I killed that character, you could also at the same time just be like, I'm gonna... not good at
yeah, I'm going to not choose this, but as you lose your mind...
I almost kind of want to see him kill him and say, I'm going to be a different person
right
than him, but still end up becoming him some other way. Because I would do everything in my power not to become that guy.
But
I would probably kill...
Yeah, in doing nothing, in doing everything in your power, you are actually on track to become.
Like, there's a little bit more to the story that they could do. Because I think that it would be that exact moment where I will stop traveling, I'll stop trying to help people or do anything, I'll just try to enjoy my life. But then what the fuck happens?
Yeah.
Where he's like, all right, maybe I'll blow up one thing.
and that's his whole, as everything kind of plays out in his mind one last time, as he's thinking about everything that's happened in his life, I think it's just too much strain of the thought of himself. The whole paradox of his existence is just too much of a strain for him to really comprehend, and I think that's just what mentally breaks him. He just doesn't know what to do with his life, and he doesn't want to just sit there forever.
He wants to have a purpose.
Yeah. Feels like he's got to be doing something good in the world.
Go work for Greenpeace. What the fuck?
Let's be a more active participant.
Yeah, it's, I always like time travel in movies.
Yeah.
To see how well thought out everything was.
Yeah.
And I think this could have went a step further, because it could have went beyond that twist that he is everybody. I understand it's a smaller budget, which is kind of why earlier I was thinking, oh, they're just going to talk at a bar for a very long time. They're just going to talk about time travel. That's how you get around time travel when you don't have money. I was actually a little bit impressed with the budget and how things looked.
Yeah, I mean, it looks, for being a lower budget movie, like... It has Handsome Hawk.
Yeah, but it didn't look really like the effects weren't completely cheesy in it. So
yeah.
I mean, it looked good.
Not even like special effects. I'm talking period correct cars.
Sets. Cinematography. Yeah.
That cost a lot of money to get that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Like especially like the futuristic. Like the space training set, like they had to build that. There's not just one of those. Like they could find an orphanage or find a bar or a house to film the rest of that. But obviously they had to come up with stuff.
I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of those sets were just built. I think definitely had the money for it. And I do like the character who wants to get to be an astronaut. And is denied at being an astronaut because she's a woman. And then kind of has the opportunity to be the astronaut once life fucks her over and she's becomes a guy.
Literally.
I also don't know how I feel about, like, when she wakes up from after the C-section or however many days it's been, doesn't feel anything, just in this weird conversation with the doctor. And they treat, I don't want to say necessarily film it as if it's a horror, but totally against her will is kind of an awful thing to watch.
Yeah.
And it's weird too, because you watch movies where, I'm sorry, we couldn't save your legs. This one's, sorry, you're no longer a woman.
Sorry, we couldn't save your vagina.
Yeah, it's weird how casually treats her kind of losing her feminine identity, even because I was waiting for that when she's explaining her backstory, I felt like, you know, I didn't feel like I was a woman, you know, like the typical like trans story we hear, you know, they felt like they're a man in a woman's body, but there never was any of that. There's just like, oh, I didn't fit in, I felt different, but there was never, but she clearly was a woman. And then all of a sudden they're like, we're making you a man now.
And she's very accepting of it.
Yeah. And
almost right off the bat.
Like, I gotta imagine that having that taken from you, no matter how open-minded you are, is probably a jarring experience. But just so much fucking else going on in this movie, you know? Like, I don't think that's an entire movie in and of itself is a woman being turned into a man.
It's interesting when she has to learn to be a man. The way it's portrayed in the movie, I guess I'll have to learn, so I'll start practicing on my voice and my mannerisms.
Smoking a lot of cigarettes.
the way to change your voice is to have a bomb detonate in your face.
Yeah.
That's where your vocal cords really tighten up.
And become Ethan Hawke.
That, I think, was the... that was the only... you see all the time travel, and you think, that all seems realistic. Then you see Ethan Hawke's face with massive scars, and you see in the future, you're like, I believe this time travel, but I don't buy a handsome Hawk being that handsome after taking a bomb to the face and getting a skin graft.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like Deadpool at first.
Yeah, that was like, you know, I guess we should...
Yeah, he does.
Oh, my God.
He doesn't look like Ethan Hawke.
Doesn't he?
Oh, my God, he does. Yeah, we should clear that up, is that, you know, the woman Jane and John, also known as the unmarried wife, that is one actress playing those roles, but then when the bomb goes off, they used a whole, like, oh, she got reconstructive surgery and becomes Ethan Hawke, whose physique is entirely different, too.
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah, it's pretty jarring.
They should have just pulled the sliders, the sliders story, where when he went through time, he just came out different one point for no reason.
Yeah.
And then everybody was just super accepting of it.
Yeah.
Don't they do that on Doctor Who? The doctor, why does
the doctor
change?
Yeah, when he is mortally wounded, he regenerates into a new body. Which, this is already time travel, timey-wimey. Like, if they do that, then, yeah, you really are getting into, he's a time traveler and he stops crimes
and
he
sliders,
regenerates new bodies.
I know that this is the Sliders podcast. Jerry O'Connell no longer wanted to be in it. He's the main character. So, he jumps to work, The show is endlessly jumping through wormholes trying to get back to their world, or at least a habitable world that they're okay with. And I think it's the third season he jumps through, and he's just a different guy. And they're okay. Everyone is okay with this.
Yeah,
he's completely different.
I guess that can happen every once in a while.
That would make more sense. Or if Ethan Hawke's character said something along the lines of, my surgery wasn't good, but after going through time, I started experiencing some interesting physical changes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, like it tried to fix him somewhat. Maybe that would change his physique to match better.
Yeah.
There, I wrote your movie. Mm-hmm. Predestination 2.
The Doctor, right now, if we're going to Doctor Who, the Doctor is a woman now, so I'm sure there are fans out there writing that fan fiction about the male Doctor stumbling across a female Doctor. And
that'd be interesting.
I'm sure someone's writing it now. Like,
I guarantee it's already been written.
Go to Tumblr. You all just stare at me.
Wait, explain this
a little bit more.
It's
dark down there.
What?
Is this a fucking themselves story?
That was the joke I was making.
Yeah,
that's the joke I was making. Someone's probably already written fan fiction about the Doctor, the male version of the Doctor, bumping into the female version of the Doctor, and then they fucking...
When I was younger, I worked on some fan fiction for a book series called Remnants, but it was fan fiction for a kid that wanted to continue the story. Adult fan fiction is pretty much an adult that wanted two characters to fuck that did not, so they write a whole story about how they fuck.
That is essentially what fan fiction is now. Yeah,
that's pretty much all. Yeah, that's pretty much all fan fiction.
Yeah,
at this point.
Yeah.
They watched the movie. They didn't fuck. I'm gonna fix this.
I mean that was essentially 50 Shades of Grey. It was originally Twilight fan fiction.
I like how that was originally Twilight fan fiction and has almost nothing to do with Twilight.
Well, I mean, they had to take the vampire plot out to make the movie.
But fan fiction is, because, like, Lexi, she reads it, and she is telling me about...
Go ahead, throw her under the bus.
I am. And I'm sure she's listening right now and fuming, but she tells me about, like, she reads Sherlock fan fiction.
Oh, wow.
And she's telling me about, like, the plots of some of them, and some of them really are just, like, their characters are just Sherlock and John Watson in name only, and... There's like one she loves that she always talks about where like they're like Hollywood stars, but
that's interesting.
Yeah, but
do they fuck?
Of course they do. Yeah.
Each other?
Yeah. Essentially what
no.
it is. Yeah.
No.
Fan fiction is just getting
in my
your fan
fiction.
To fuck.
Cumberbatch, his Sherlock would fuck Robert Downey Jr.
I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
Yeah.
You're fucking Sherlock?
No, I'm fucking Sherlock. We're both gonna fuck Sherlock.
Well, like, one time, like, I was joking with Lexi, and I came up with an idea for, like, we were talking about the new He-Man movie coming out, and she's like, are they gonna get Dolph Lundgren and Frank Langella back? And I'm like, I'm like, what, is old He-Man and old Skeletor? And I'm like, you know what, that'd be fucking awesome. I want to write that. And then I was like, I'm gonna write that fan fiction. She's like, but they gotta fuck, right? And I'm like, no, it's just gonna be an action story. Like, no, get your mind out of the gutter.
Yeah, why does it always happen? Fucking.
But then there's like, I don't know where to put it because all fan fiction websites are just like smutty.
Yeah, no, no one's gonna.
You
take
know what?
It. You're gonna try
yeah,
to like
yeah,
send
yeah.
it to me. Like, can
put
you
put it
just tease it and never get to it. Just make them mad. You're gonna have to read chapter two. Maybe that's where
yeah,
they fuck.
Maybe that's where he meant.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe it's chapter three. At the very end, Skeletor takes off his pants. And he's like,
I don't have a penis.
I don't even have a penis. It's not a skeleton. Do you know how anatomy works, He-Man?
That's it. That's how I'm writing it.
Oh, there you go.
Stay tuned, fair listeners, for my He-Man and Skeletor fan fiction.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, we really got off the rails there. But
no, we didn't.
I was just making
the whole movie is about a guy that fucks himself.
Yeah.
Into
so
existence.
Yeah, so we're still on that subject in general.
We still are, yeah.
Jude Law, fucking Martin Freeman.
Why?
Both Watsons.
Is he like that Watson on Watson action?
You didn't name the characters. You went straight for the
yeah,
the
well,
actors.
Of course, because anybody that mm-hmm. knows the two Sherlocks knows who plays them.
But you're talking about the Watsons.
Yeah. Or well, the two Sherlock.
James
oh,
is like, let's get
man.
Back,
okay.
let's get back on
okay.
track.
Yeah.
And Chris is like, what if the Watson?
Chris is like, excuse me, I'd like to get right back off that track.
This episode where James introduces everyone to fan fiction, but yeah, go to Tumblr.
This is our most explicit Watson. Episode so far, I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean it has.
It's all about fucking.
Mm-hmm.
That's 90% of that movie is just
maybe that's what this started out as.
Is that
it was
secret
like
theme?
It was like some kind of fan fiction about something, and they were like, we can just turn this into a movie and we'll get Handsome Hawk in it.
I feel like the initial idea was, what if this character is every character?
Yeah,
I feel like they sat down to write that.
Sort of the tagline, isn't
it? It's based off a short story.
Yeah,
but do you imagine? Okay, but the person that wrote the short story,
yeah.
Do you think somebody started writing this like this mystery about tracking this guy down through time, and then slowly
well,
in the middle of the process decide
that
he's everybody.
That part's the original short story doesn't have a bomb or anything in it. The entire story is literally just
him fucking himself.
Him fucking himself. That's the entire story is just that half of it, and it's setting
I
up
I feel that you're baiting me a slight bit, Chuck.
What?
You're like, explain yourself. You're like, it's not in the book. I'm like, you didn't explain the book. Did you read the book? Clearly he's read the book.
It's by Robert Heinlein, who wrote, well, we probably know him best for Starship Troopers, but he was,
oh, okay.
He was a prolific sci-fi author. But yeah, I didn't read the story. I didn't read the differences between the story and the movie, but obviously Chuck did. Yeah.
It's everything is, even to the dates that everything happens is exactly the same, except there's just no bomber in it.
There's no fizzle.
But everything's the same. Even there's even a guy playing "I'm My Own Grandpa" on the jukebox. it is directly like almost word for word, except there's no bomber.
When was that story? When was it written or published?
The '60s.
Okay, so it knew the future.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's which again I think is probably the reason why everything takes place in like. From 1960 to 1985,
yeah.
Even though you're thinking to yourself, that's not very futuristic now, but it was futuristic at the time that it was written.
That's what I was guessing, too, from watching it, that the story must have been based in the 60s, because they're like, oh yeah, time travel was invented in 1985. And I'm
yeah.
like, well, this... When did this happen?
Do you think he knew that Back to the Future 2 would happen in 1985? Is that his...
Or
is that his idea? That maybe he saw into the future and said, you know what? Time travel is going to be pretty big in 1985.
Or did Back to the Future get the idea
it's possible
from this to do it in 1985?
Too many time travel Marty McFly doesn't fuck himself.
He tries to fuck
his mom.
I
wonder though now. Like, I wonder if someone did read this story.
Yeah, there's a similarity there in the idea of you can't. It's always the exact opposite. You can't. You can't fuck yourself. You can't fuck yourself into existence.
Like, I want to research this. I wonder if someone read the story and is like, I think we can make this funny.
It's the kind of version of trying to not become your own grandfather.
Mm-hmm. They definitely don't credit that short story or story.
It's the second credit listed in
the
credits.
They do credit it.
They credit it in Back to the Future?
That's
what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I've watched enough behind the scenes stuff for Back to the Future.
Oh, absolutely.
And
they got the idea for the story or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like,
I think conceptually, if you think about time travel, what is the one thing that is the most frightening, which would be knocking yourself out of existence.
Yeah.
So even though there is a weird mom-parent thing going on,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of like you got to get them back together. The mom's more in love with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he is all going to ruin his own existence by his promiscuous mother that wants to sleep with
him. Kind of taking the focus off of his father.
Her sexual awakening is him.
Did you guys see the John Mulaney bit where he's imagining what's like pitching Back to the Future? Where he's like playing two different characters and they're like, yeah, and he invents this time machine. And the studio exec's like, oh yeah, so they go back in time to stop the Kennedy assassination, right? That's better. That's better. That's a good idea. Well, what was your idea? Well, we just thought this would be funny. If, like, it'd be really funny if maybe he goes back in time and tries to fuck his mom.
They really do a good job in Back to the Future to cover their asses, because he goes back to that time by mistake, because Doc's like, oh, this is when I came up with time travel.
Yeah.
So in the spur of the moment, that's why he goes back to this weird fucking time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't. The time travel is really hard. They need plutonium, and they really think kind of hard to make this story work. And I know eventually we'll get to Back to the Future, but I feel like Back to the Future is a pretty fucking solid time travel movie.
Yeah, I do too.
Is it your favorite time travel movie?
Yes.
Mine. Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
I don't know what mine. That was a tough one. Like, I think Back to the Future is great. Like, well, I remember when we started film school, that was one of those, like, required movies we had to watch for screenwriting. And I know if I would teach screenwriting, I'd show Back to the Future, because that script is fucking airtight. But, I don't know. It's a tough one, I'd say, my favorite time travel movie is.
The essential time travel movie? Probably. I think it works the best. Even the sequels are kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good balance of not just, it doesn't throw, I mean, it throws random words at you. It doesn't really try to explain how the time travel works, or at least not in a logical way, but I think it at least follows its own rules. It doesn't just use time travel and then say, ah, fuck it, we'll do whatever we want.
Yeah, and I think some of the greatest moments in that franchise, too, is where they get to play around with things a little more.
Yeah.
Two is really clever. They lost some of the cast, so they had to recast. And they recast well, for the most part. But I really enjoy the scenes where he has to go back to 1955 and, like, not be seen.
Yeah.
And some people see
by
him
himself.
And
yeah.
think that he's the other guy. Like,
yeah.
he's.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually use the footage from the first one for the second one, different shots and stuff like that.
It's really clever how they put it all together.
Is
Predestination that clever? Maybe not, but it's fun.
it's
more like a fun whodunit.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
Yeah.
I think that's where this was kind of enjoyable, not exactly knowing where it was going.
Yeah.
The time travel didn't woo me. I wasn't curious about how this is all going to come together necessarily. After I watched the movie, totally okay with it. Didn't even feel like trying to figure out plot holes and rip the movie apart.
Yeah.
Just like, I'm like, I'm just completely all right with the fact that Ethan Hawke is everybody.
Yeah.
I'm just cool with it. I'm down with it.
Yeah, I feel like that was how it was pitched to studio. Like, it's a movie with only one character.
Yeah. Ooh, sounds like we can make it cheap.
I'm surprised Nicolas Cage didn't make this movie.
It feels like it would be right up his alley.
Oh my god. I would watch the shit out of that.
Go with what was that? Oh, that other movie that he did, Knowing?
Oh, yeah.
I remember that movie. That was Aliens, not time travel. I was trying to remember which part that was. That was Aliens predicting the end of the world and him trying to...
If I remember correctly, it wasn't a good movie, but it kind of had a cool ending to it.
The ending was like the only... It was one of those movies that had... I remember the effects were horrendously ugly, and Nicolas Cage's performance was like...
Awesome.
Typical Nicolas Cage, just all over, like, wildly over-dramatic for most of the film.
Yeah.
But yeah, the twist I remember being interesting, even though I can't remember at the moment, so maybe it wasn't that good.
You know what movie I actually enjoyed with time travel was Paycheck, because they didn't actually show you, like, anything with the time travel. It's just like, all of a sudden, Ben Affleck wakes up and he's like, oh, I guess I traveled through time. But he didn't know it, he didn't remember it. And you remember what happened because he purposely made himself, I forget how they explain it, but it made himself forget, because what it brings him to is the destruction of the world, basically. And I thought that was very clever how they set that one up.
For a second there, when you said Paycheck, I thought of Blank Check.
Oh.
The like 90s movie where the kid gets a blank check and gets rich. You know,
like,
those
where
checks.
Is he? You're like, where is there? Was there time travel in that movie? I don't remember if that was in there.
And
maybe
that's
why
he bought
a time machine.
Yeah.
As soon as he found out it was the Ben Affleck movie, he's like, you fucking
Ben Affleck and John Woo. I remember I saw it, but I don't remember anything from it.
That's because
Aaron
around Eckhart, the same time Kill Bill came out, so that's the Uma Thurman movie you
wanted
to watch.
Uma Thurman and Paul Giamatti also.
Yeah.
It was an okay movie.
Yeah.
And what else came out? Big Fish came out around that time, so.
Yeah, oh yeah. I just thought it was clever for a time travel movie. Like, it showed nothing of special effects for time travel or anything like that. It was just like, okay, you went, you know? And basically, this is what happened.
I like my time travel movies that have zero special effects. low budgets.
And one character.
Yeah. Two
as
if you have to have another character.
As few characters as possible.
This is
yeah,
the perfect
two,
movie for you.
Two, if you don't want to have to green screen Ethan Hawke twice, because that's going to waste the budget in special effects.
Now, you might have problems with the fact that... how some of the story transpires, but I don't think it's ever done in a way that's totally ridiculous.
No,
it's serious and it stays serious. It could be so stupid as if you said Nicolas Cage were to star.
Yeah,
it would be a totally different movie. It would be so dumb if Nicolas Cage just ended up being everybody.
Yeah, if Nicolas Cage played everyone, I would want him to play both John and Jane as well. And I, you know, forget getting a female actress. Let's, no, just Nicolas Cage.
Or add Nicolas Cage where after she becomes a man, it's Nicolas Cage. But then when Nicolas Cage gets his face blown off, he becomes Ethan Hawke.
Jesus.
So you could add in an extra person in there if you wanted to. Be like, oh, we can't do the makeup. Let's just get Leo. We definitely want Leo.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you had Michael J. Fox from 1985, or 1992, I should say, or 91, whatever year Back to Future 2 came out, you had that Michael J. Fox, he starts out as the woman. And then Nicolas Cage, and then the woman becomes Nicolas Cage.
Is this your fan fiction?
No. I was just thinking about the fact that, you know, Michael J. Fox played a woman in Back to the Future 2.
What if there were a couple Michael J. Foxes and they fucked themselves?
That would be kind of scary.
What if that would have been how they replaced Eric Stoltz instead of reshooting everything? They just had him come back to the present day, and it's like, what happened? I don't know, some stuff got mixed up, now I look like this. Maybe mom fucked a completely different guy when she had me. I don't know.
And they shot him on fruit by the foot.
Eric Stoltz thinks he's gonna be Marty McFly. They're like, no, you're gonna be
Mask. Just not funny.
Mask. Yeah, you're
Jesus.
Mask.
It'll make you a star.
Rocky
really?
Dennis.
We're gonna bury you in so much makeup no one's gonna even know who you are.
Jesus Christ. That poor guy.
Why should anybody listening watch this?
I mean, if they've already listened to this point, they better fucking watch this movie. Because it's done at this point.
How would you... Okay, somebody who's listening to this, their friend is anti-podcast. They're very hipster. How do you sell this movie to the person who's not listening to this?
I think the
on the street, you have 5 minutes. It's like, it is a task. You have 5 minutes to sell a stranger Predestination.
Pitch up.
Oh,
go. You're in a supermarket. You have to corner somebody and sell Predestination to them.
I mean, if they're not already sold on Handsome Hawk by himself, I'd say it's... If you like, almost if you like puzzles, it's a movie that...
Can you really sell to me, like, I'm that person in the store?
I can't. I don't think I can sell it that hard. It's such
just
it's
pretend
a hard,
like you just met him in the grocery store.
Yeah, like, sir.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah, have... Do you know who Ethan Hawke is?
No? Oh. This is a tough sell if you don't know who Ethan Hawke is. He was kind of my only selling point.
Did you see Boyhood? Yeah, yeah. The man, not the boy.
And not the man that he becomes at the end of the film.
Yeah.
Still just the older man. I'd say it's a good movie for anyone that wants to think. It's literally the exact opposite of a Transformers or just a cheesy movie like that. It's a good movie if you have to pay attention to it. It's not a movie that you can sit down and look at your phone every 2 minutes or even leave the room and say, I'll come back and I'll know what's going on. You can't miss even
5 minutes
of that movie.
That's how you sell it to somebody. You're like, listen, there's an actor, Ethan Hawke. He's in it. It's a great movie. You can't miss
a
minute of it. You'll be so confused.
Yeah, literally. You'll just miss it all. But I would say it's a good movie for anyone that does like time travel or likes the theory of it, because that's more what it plays on is the theory of time travel more than time travel itself. It's just the idea. It presents a very interesting idea.
I would like to see the version of this if things don't work out. Because they have to keep, like, what happens if they stray and they pop out of existence?
I
think
mean,
it could be cool.
That,
like,
stops that stops the fizzle bomber, but it also just stops everything else from happening.
And nobody knows about it.
Yeah. But how would you put that all into one movie?
Predestination 2.
Well, I didn't say how would you tag it. I'm saying, like...
Predestination 2, The Final Destination.
Oh, jeez. Forget it. No, I was... I mean, like, what would you do? Like, because at the beginning, you're going to have him stop himself. Okay?
There wouldn't be a...
Where's the movie go from there?
I think... Well, first of all, it'd be The Predestination. And second of all, I think... I think what you could do that would be kind of cool is... Basically still the concept of... You know, maybe even footage for most of the first movie.
Okay.
But then where you, like, something goes, astray.
Yeah.
And you could have maybe a fun different movie that's going down the path of they're going to be wiped out of existence. How much damage is it going to cause?
Yeah. You could do one that's just... You could do a sequel, I don't know how far you could stretch it, but I would agree...
53 years.
Yeah. You could probably do one... I think just as Ethan Hawke is at the end when he's kind of like losing his mind. Well, kind of like you said, if he keeps choosing not to do anything, is that just playing into the idea? Like if he keeps trying to, he says, no, I won't jump. And then something happens. He realizes, oh fuck, if I don't jump, like, well, that's obviously what happens with his character is he probably sat there and thought, no, I can't use it. I can't use it. And then saw something on TV that made him say, well, fuck, I have to use it, or else that's going to happen, and that's where it keeps leading. It could be you could do a fun movie where it's just him trying to not fuck up, but by doing that, he keeps fucking up and eventually does end up turning into the Fizzle Bomber himself, even though he kept trying. He kept saying, no, I got this figured out. I know how to not become that crazy person.
There actually is a name for that, like where you're trying to prevent something and you actually cause it. I can't remember what the theory is called, but there's actually a theory for that. I can't remember what it is right now. That it's an actual thing that they've talked about, you know.
The Mandela effect?
Was ever, huh?
No, okay. Well, do you have any final thoughts on that?
No, I'm out of thoughts.
Blown, fizzled or wet.
Whoa. Was that pun intended? I couldn't.
I don't know. I guess we'll have to tune in to the sequel to find that out.
The predestinationing. Destin harder.
Destin harder.
We now have two movies on the table. We have The Prestige. We have Predestination.
Yes.
I'll leave it a surprise for what we do next week, and hopefully you have fun trying to figure out the common bonds between the all of them. At least 1, 2, and 3, because when we get to the fourth one, that's where we're going to reveal what it is at the end. So at least you might have some fun throughout that episode before we throw it all together.
What is next week, yours or his?
It's just
yeah, it has to be. Duh, you did
yours or his. It's mine and yours.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's me and you.
Yeah.
We're left. We're all that's left. Yeah. And
I think we got a pretty well-rounded.
The cool thing is
for this theme.
Yeah, there's a really simple connection, but with just two movies, you could be all over the fucking place.
Yeah, right.
So you need that third movie to ground you a little bit. But I think that's fun.
The fourth one's just off the wall.
We'll see. We'll see. But it's another episode of Cinema D'Amore. We're on Twitter at Cinema D'Amore. I'm at JJMorgan19 on Twitter.
Sinister Dick.
ChuckFinn66.
James Reinhardt.
We're on iTunes and Google Play. Subscribe, rate, and review us. And above all, thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks, guys.